When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
What do you mean? Keep my men in line. What happened down on two?
I need a bag and a trolley.
I said it's coming.
They made a mistake. A man who was just released on four ended up back on two the next day. Got out on the floor and then they killed them all.
You need those other men there.
They're just leaving.
Now.
If he was released, you heard me.
No one's getting out, are they?
Not now. Not after this. At least your friend is free.
You two, on program now. Up, hands on your heads. Move. Let's go, come on, let's go.
How many guards on each level?
Never more than 12.
Hello and welcome to the Star Wars TV cast, broadcasting across the galaxy. This is episode 38. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm James. This episode we're covering is Andor Season 1, Episode 9.
Nobody's listening.
And it's great to be back for another episode of the best show on television at the moment. Yeah. Walking Dead aside, of course. How are you, mate? You well?
I'm good, actually. You just remind me. I think I have a couple of Walking Deads that I need to catch up on, actually. But, yeah, so, yeah. No, I'm all good. I'm all good, mate. Yes, I'm back home.
Well, get yourself, and I recommend this to everyone, get yourself all caught up and join us for the last few episodes because it's going to be a little bit of an emotional ride. And everyone on the Walking Dead cast is going great, and they have an extra episode for all the feedback. So if there's anything you want to say, a farewell to The Walking Dead or a thank you to Jason and Lucy, get those in because they'll have a whole episode to deal with it. Mm. But talking of that, we have a new section this week, and it's we've been doing it for a couple of weeks now, but I want to name it The Adventures of James.
Adventure. Good statement. A Jedi craves not these things.
James is off on a new adventure each week. And this week, James, what new things have come into your life?
I'm not really that adventurous. I get bored. And so I just screw around with different things. All right. But this, I finally...
Don't be embarrassed, James. Don't be embarrassed. Everyone will be very jealous of this.
Yeah, my wife, this is the most unattractive thing about me, apparently. And there's a few. During COVID, I got bored and I started off with just a trinkety dinkety little Mario Kart wheel, and this week I finished building basically a full racing rig in the basement with like motion platform seat.
This is for his video game setup for his racing.
Sadly, and like I sent somebody a video and they're like, "Why have you got a full racing harness on?" And I was like, watch to the end of the video. If I didn't have it on, I'd have got a concussion in my own basement, which is pretty sad. So anyway.
Yeah, he would have got thrown out of his chair.
very childish and very fun. So
that looks amazing. It's a full hydraulic racing kit with the wheel and a seat that moves left to right, up and down, back and forth, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I stopped short of getting the full shebang that does power slides, because I would literally get divorced if that happened. So I had to draw the line somewhere. my wife will never listen to this, so I'm fine. So it's all right. So I'm good. Anyway.
Well, it's good to be back with everyone in another episode of Andor, and let's kick things off with the Star Wars question of the week.
Yes, so this is my question this week. So what is your favourite Star Wars property? And I want you to sell it to me like it's, you know, a real estate thing is what we asked, and... yeah, we got some interesting replies, I believe, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Well, let's start off with mine. And I'm going to give a quick answer to last week's one, because I skipped mine, and I know there's some completionists around there. And what would you do on a day on a day on Tatooine? And I would, of course, ride around partying with the Jawas. That little scene in The Mandalorian when Mando was crouched in the driving section was hilarious. But this week I would like to be at Aunt Beru and Uncle Ben's place on Tatooine. It has great sunsets, plenty of water, and an amazing droid workshop.
And blue milk, as much as you can drink.
Yes, all the blue milk that anyone could want.
And mine will be, I would like to sell this to you. So it's a beautiful, scenic Airbnb forest escape. Peaceful, natural build. The property is situated exquisitely amongst the branches of some ancient trees. Become part of the friendly local community. Enjoy the evening sing-alongs around the campfires. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Moon of Endor.
Oh, well, that's beautiful and a great place to be, except when they're roasting you over an open fire.
Well, yeah, there are some drawbacks to it, yeah.
Yes, but there would be speeder bike rides.
I just want to rig those big logs up to swing around on.
So. Yeah, exactly. That's great. That's very funny. All right, so we've got some great feedback once again. Thank you, everyone. And James, do you want to start? We'll take turns on this one, because they're a bit more intricate.
Great. This is great. This is what I wanted. It's perfect. Perfect answer. Yeah. So Randy Stevenson, I love this one. Jabba's Palace. Eclectic home formerly owned by a well-known socialite on a spacious private lot. Plenty of room for entertaining. Custom built-ins for displaying your trophies. Short hover boat ride to breathtaking views of the local wildlife. Finished playroom in the basement. Perfect for the kiddos or any large pets. Very good.
That's excellent. Russell Piner, Cloud City. Fancy being the administrator of your very own facility? Well, look no further than Cloud City. A sprawling metropolis in the sky, complete with carbon freezing technology, lobotomized assistant, and a severed hand. This deal is getting worse all the time, so don't hang around to purchase your slice of luxury in the sky. Very brilliant. Good, Russell.
Really good.
Impressive.
Megan Dively Lehman. The underwater palace in Phantom Menace. Jar Jar may have been a disaster, but at least his presence gave us the visually stunning sequence diving under the waters of his home planet. That was the highlight of the Jar Jar. Yes.
Yeah, it was. And at that moment, all the singing going, ah, as they're swimming in. And like, that's such an Only in Star Wars thing where they had that breathing respirator.
Yeah, breathing respirator.
Fit in your pocket.
It's like the size of a Pez dispenser, but you can breathe for hours. It's bloody amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And some quick ones. Tiffany Agarbright, Ewok Village. Great for stargazing and fun for the whole family.
Oh, I totally forgot to put in the firework display of exploding small moon.
That's true.
Dave Pleninger, Bespin. Always wanted to live in the clouds.
Smiley face. George Haywood, Coruscant, the Jedi Temple, Jedi Archives, Jedi Sparring, House of Commons, although I don't know what it's called, the politics place, I think that's called the Senate, and all the tall skyscrapers. I love the speed of traffic in the air, Coruscant underworld, though, that is grim. That's a place I would redo and sell. So a few renovations in the underworld.
So basically, George, you're going to be a slumlord, is that the idea? Yeah. I think he's going to be down there just... He'll be like running Cyril's block and like selling from under Cyril's mum when she can't afford it anymore. Very good. Mac Dean says, Hoth. I would have a snow cone booth. Very good. Yeah. That was my second choice was Hoth. I was trying to, if I could turn Hoth into a snowboarding resort, that would be the dream.
That's true. Put some blue milk on those snow cones.
Yes.
And we've got one from last week, a day on Tatooine. Spencer Bailey says, sunbathe with one of those totally hot Twi'lek women. Where? Get a nice luxury suite in Anchorhead. Yes, I don't think Anchorhead gets as much love as it should be. When are we going to have a whole series based in Anchorhead?
Do they touch on it in Obi-Wan? I can't remember.
I think they do. I think they do.
Yeah,
you're right.
I don't know if they go there, but they mention it. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was great, everyone. Well done, well done. Very, very funny. And thank you, James, for the question this week.
Yeah, thank you for everyone getting involved.
Yeah.
That's good.
All right, so let's get into the episode. Bad things are happening at the prison. Mothma's getting nervous. Dedra has gone full Empire, and Bix is paying the price. James, what did you think? Did you like this episode?
Without being boring, yes, I did. I have to say, though, I'm just going to quote one of my favourites here. The worst thing you can do right now is bore me. I went online, and there is some rumblings of disgruntled fans out there saying that they're getting a bit slow. It's getting too slow now, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, I'm liking it. It's complex. It's a political drama. It's not a flash in the pan action show. You know, this isn't, as we talked about before, this isn't like a quick sort of like space battle and then on to the next one. But that being said, everyone, you know, there's negative sort of rumblings around. But I just checked on Rotten Tomatoes, and this episode has got 100% this week.
Wow.
Critics
and viewers?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, I just skimmed over it literally before we came on air to do this.
Yeah, good.
And I have to say I'm with them. I mean, we'll get to this later on, but I had goosebumps when this cuts to black at the end of this one.
I know.
And but we'll get there.
So we're going to do things a little different this week. Well, actually, we've been kind of doing it in the past few weeks. As the threads of the story start to merge, we thought we'd cover this week planet by planet. So we're going to start off on Ferrix and then head over to Coruscant. And then, of course, we'll end up in Narkema 5.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's jump in our starship and head over to Ferrix and get into our review of Episode 9, Nobody's Listening.
Buckle up.
All right, this episode, Nobody's Listening, directed by Toby Haynes, written by Bo Willimon, and created by Tony Gilroy. James, here we are on Ferrix.
Yeah, can I just say, Toby Haynes is like doing a great job. I mean, right? these are really, really amping it up in a different way from the first arc and stuff. And like, you can see the Black Mirror-esque work that he's bringing into this.
Yeah.
So yes, hats off, Toby. Thank you.
Thank the maker.
let's talk about Deirdre, shall we? Can I, please, again?
I love you.
I know.
Yes, of course, Ferrix.
It was
a brilliant little opening, wasn't it?
I have to say, right, her interview technique is haunting.
It's
eloquent evil personified. And I mean, I can just see like Denise Goff's agent going, right, I'm taking this scene and I'm banking that any pitch that we need to put her up for, this performance is just knocks it out of the park. I mean, the way she shifts throughout this interrogation from the softer tones, she starts off all like, she wants to help Bix, and if you just tell me stuff, and to downright cold, venomous snarl towards it's just like, I'm like, and I'm also thinking, right, I'm thinking here, I think there's a certain masked gentleman that's probably getting a little bit hot round the collar. I think we could be looking at a contender for Mrs. Vader here. I mean, like,
yeah, right.
Like, she gives as good as she gets. I mean, it's like...
Well, yeah, someone's in the standing in the way of Vader, and I think he would fight to the death, but we'll get onto that later as well. Yeah.
Just her opening lines, and when she describes, you know, fishing and the net, and she just leans into Bix, and you get that, you're in my net, Bix.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, are you a fish or a thief?
Yes.
But she's certainly revealed herself to not only be ambitious, but truly evil.
Oh,
And Bix says to her, refers to her, you're the ISB, you're the worst of the worst. And she kind of shrugs and goes, well, thank you very much.
And
I think James is admiration of Deirdre has only increased from this torture scene.
Yeah, it's a bit concerning, isn't it, really? It's at this point, you know, I've been reading online, everyone's like, oh, you know, it's like... She's like pure evil, and I'm not. Yeah, I still can't look away. I think she's playing it brilliantly though, and it's
I think James might want to have a turn in that chair.
Yeah,
well, before of course Dr. Gorst comes.
Oh
along.
My God, Dr. Gorst! Oh wait, can we just talk about him for a minute? Can we just please?
He was brilliant.
I laughed out loud. I mean, he's phenomenally sadistic nerd torturer. Basically, is the way I describe this man. He's brilliant. Yeah. I want to see like a side story of him off duty at home. It's like, nice day at the office, dear. Oh yes, made some lovely progress with the old torturing process. What's for dinner, honey? And it's like he's just so pleased and excited about his discovery. It's brilliant.
A smug little smile. Yeah, he really reminded me of actually Stephen Merchant.
Yeah,
sidekick of Ricky Gervais, and I really enjoyed it. I thought he tore up the screen, but I loved the unique interview system that some of us are very excited about.
The way he's so excited and he wants to tell with so much delight, and he's like, we happened upon these sound recordings of screaming, pleasing, Desonite sort of children being put to death. I'm like. I mean, he loves his job. He's a fucking sadist.
Yeah. Well, thanks to Forever Geek, and we do the research so you don't have to. They found this came from an outer rim moon, Dyson Frey, and according to Forever Geek, Dyson Frey is confirmed to be an outer rim moon in the galaxy, and it is an original creation for the Andor series. And while Bix is being interrogated on Ferrix, Deirdre hands the reins over to Dr. Gorst, who explains the origin of the ISB's torture method. Gorst revealed that Dyson Frey was visited by the Imperials while planning a refueling center, but the inhabitants of the moon did not take kindly to the invasion.
Funny that.
And so, of course, they killed them off, but
of course.
While they were doing it, they recorded it to for proof of death, and when they came to, there was no answer. When they came to check what was going on, they found the officers huddled together in a crawl space after listening to it. Dr. Gore says, we modified it slightly, adjusting. And I'm like, it's kind of like the light tailoring. They really delight in the adjustment.
I want to know how they modified this without melting all of their brains. I'm curious.
No,
I mean,
exactly.
They're obviously just... on other test subjects, I presume.
I was thinking about this as well, of course. And as we're podcasting, we're recording on various recording things. So maybe they just saw like the waveforms, but I guess they just A/B tested it on some unlucky people.
I mean, I wonder if they're actually just using our podcast on repeat. I love how it ended up being primarily
children, which had its own particular effect.
I can vouch for that. My kids, when they scream, just drives me up the wall. That's
funny. Yeah. I was at this wedding recently when I was out in Palm Springs, and they actually had this sound chair, which was basically a lawn chair which had speakers attached to it. Mm. So it was about a dozen speakers. And they would play this sound, and it'd get bigger and bigger and bigger and deeper and deeper and deeper into the vibe. And then it'd cut off, and you felt this whole body experience from it. And so, look, this sort of thing I can imagine being, you know, completely real. And if they found the most agonizing sound in the world, it would drive you crazy.
I've almost got another Adventures of James. Remember I bought that haptic vest thing?
Oh, yeah.
So like that with the throbbing bass going through your body. So, yeah, I can imagine that. And let's just talk about the headgear that they put on Dix as well, and the fact that it comes out of an intergalactic pelican case. Pelican cases are great, but there's just no way to disguise them. I'm sorry.
They are ubiquitous throughout the galaxy, I think. But Pelican have got a deal on Ferrix.
Yeah. A special
supply deal with the Empire.
They're building, there's probably on Narkeena 4, they're building Pelican cases.
Yeah. Narkeena 4, is that the sister planet to Narkeena 5 where they build a Pelican?
It is, exactly. They build them, yes. They ship them over. Anyway, we'll get to that.
But I'm glad they are not just mining the expanded universe and old Star Wars. They are making up new planets. So Dizon Frey, this is a whole new concept, which I think is great. And it was interesting because they're really starting to track them all down using the stolen equipment. When Dedra was telling Bix about the previous occupant of the chair, she said that, you know, when he was on Jondora and he met someone and who asked him to are you into politics and would you like to do something more? And Jondora was a planet in the galaxy, and during the Cold War between the Sith Empire and the Galactic Republic, weapons from the Imperial base on Jondora were illegally sold on the black market. So, that was where that all came from.
Digging deep on that one. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there was I saw a little Easter egg when Dedra walks out and Bix says to her, "You're not going to believe me anyway, are you?"
Yeah.
And
she goes, "She knew
no,
she was
I
screwed.
Suppose not." Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she walks out, and then there's a clang of the door and a shot of the guard's feet marching away. And that was a perfectly mirrored scene to when Princess Leia was on the Death Star.
And they closed the door.
Can
we just talk about that? When Deirdre walks out and the other sadistic Imperial guy, the one who wanted whatever title it was to run the hotel, "I'd like to hang him." He's talking about Salmon Pak, the other guy.
Yeah.
And then Deirdre, again, it's like, "As you wish." It's like human life means nothing to this lady.
Yeah.
So, do what you want, you know. It's like.
But his enthusiasm was fantastic.
He's mental
like,
as well.
"Ooh, I'd really like to hang him. That'd be lovely."
I mean,
like there was a nice bowl of pudding to be had or something.
I know we're in the grey areas, but come the end of season two, these lot have got to be lined up and shot. There's no way they're getting out of this, because it's like, otherwise there's no morals to this tale. Which I know is probably the point, but you know. So,
Well, they're literally space Nazis now, aren't they?
Oh, they've gone past that. It's
That's true.
They're just like complete sadists, some of them. And anyway, yes, brilliant. I just want to nerd out about the lighting.
Yeah, go on.
In a scene.
Yeah.
So we start off with Deirdre, and it's the wider shots. And when she's like a little bit more approachable and softer with her questions, we have the softer front light on her and stuff. And then as we move on and she does that lean in and she cranes her neck in, it's like almost like reptilian the way she comes in. And we're now on this sort of tight shot, and it's moodier and it's edge-lit. So her face is just rim-lit from the sides, and it's like she just looks so much more evil. And it's like, and I just thought, well, maybe that's a reflection of her soul, Jonathan. Very dark.
Well, I mean, it's funny because, before we're kind of, you know, and hats off to the writing, because it's one of those things, and Game of Thrones, the early Game of Thrones, did this so well, like with Jaime, you hate him at first, but then you come around to kind of pulling for him. And this is the opposite. We're kind of pulling for Dedra, and now I'm just like, oh my God, maybe I shouldn't have been pulling for her. It might have been better if she just missed out on everything.
I don't know. We'll talk about something later, but I don't know. I think there's a change coming with her, I think, somewhere. So,
really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I find her to be Empire through and through.
Well, it's on another planet, Jonathon. So as we have a format this week, so we will see.
We shall wait till we get there. Then. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of that, shall we head off to Coruscant?
Let us.
All right. right, so here we are on Coruscant, and we will be addressing a couple of things here, the ISB and Mon Mothma. Should we start with the ISB?
No, let's not.
No, okay, let's go to Mothma then.
Because I think it's the first time we see that, and I think it sets the tone for what she's up against, and then we'll
go
do that.
For it.
But just the way, again, she's in the Senate, and she's appealing for support to try and control the Emperor's grip, and we see... We you know, in the background you hear some people sort of like chanting, you know, their agreement with her. But in general, it's interesting. I never noticed this before, but I guess this is how the senators acknowledge their vote in a way, I suppose, because they like clearly they're turning off their lights to their pods and they're walking away from their viewing seats. It's like they're no longer engaged in the discussion. And as she talks, more and more of them shut off, and it's like, and it's a feeling of the crushing weight of Palpatine is like, you know, it's a full hold now, and she's running out of all options, and then she leaves.
Because no one wants to be seen to be supporting her.
Yeah, I'm not getting into politics with you about America, but yeah.
Everyone's got to keep quiet.
No. Yeah, we have different views on this, everyone. We're not going to get into it. But I think it's interesting, and then she goes and you just see her in the back of the floating limo again, and you can just see the weight, and then her driver says, "Oh, your cousin has arrived," and we see a startled panic, but also happiness in her. And
Well, I found it interesting, and you know that Airspeeder is one of my favorite. Vehicles in Star Wars now. Yeah. And there, I did notice there is a 3D printing guide on Reddit. So if anyone's got a 3D printer, off you go. But when when the door to the to her airspeeder closes, there is an audible hiss as it seals. And, you know, that once meant safety and separation from the outside and the masses. But I think it now means that she's getting, she's trapped.
Sealed in a tomb of her own making.
It really is. And because she's all the way, she's fully committed now. And obviously, as we see later, her bank accounts are showing that she's just moving money around and where she shouldn't have. And as, you know, the gaze of the eye of the Empire comes on her, I think she might get in trouble. But James, what's next for you? Do you want to talk about Vel?
Yes. I mean, I think it's interesting. So Vel arrives, and obviously Mon Mothma sort of greets her and goes, and she's happy to see her, obviously, and she's concerned for her because she's been away for 6 months. Where have you been? camping trip.
Yeah, touring the galaxy.
Camping trip with some friends. They didn't all make it, but we had fun. But I think it's funny how, like, Mon Mothma sort of reaches in to offer her comfort, and all of a sudden she comes out with the line that Cinta used on her: "The rebellion comes first. We take what's left." And it's interesting. Vel seems a lot more together when she's not around Cinta.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, it's like she's not distracted by her, and she's a lot more cold and calculated. Even to the point where Mon Mothma says, "What has he got you doing?" and she's like, cold as ice. Who? Yeah, Vel's a funny one.
It's interesting her relationship with Luthen. There is some, you know, there's still some rumors about, you know, are they related? Blah blah blah.
Who's related? But Vel.
There's some rumors online that Vel might have been Luthen's daughter or related to him in some way.
Really? Which would then make Luthen.
Luthen
and Mon Mothma, brother and sister.
Mothma's uncle, or something like that, which is very Star Wars. But
God,
you're getting
into like House of the Dragon now, aren't you?
So, yeah, it's very internet conjecture. I think the relationship was that she was just with cousins to Mothma, but she is the third, and it's nice to see Mothma able to just kind of relax a bit around her and be a bit more open.
It feels like she actually has a friend at the moment.
Yeah.
Because even Luthen she now can't trust, and he's pushed her to the edge, and the one ally she thought she had, I think, is now gone hardcore, and she's questioning herself. Like, she turns around to, I believe she, doesn't she say, later on when she goes to leave, she sort of questions her decision. And Vel's response is, "We are making something of our lives. We chose a side against the dark." And so, you know, Mon Mothma now needs someone to remind her why she's doing this, because she's clearly up shit creek without a paddle at the moment.
They're committed now, aren't they?
It's all in, Jonathan. It's all in.
So. But it was an amusing...
thank God, it only took 9 episodes, but they're all in now.
Yeah, it was funny when Perrin, you know, further reveals himself to be a bit of an arse when he goes, have you found yourself a husband yet? And she's like, well, it wasn't primarily on my mind. And, you know, obviously Perrin's got no idea what's going on with Vel. And then Mothma goes, yes, all the good ones are taken, rather sarcastically.
And the look between the two women.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the tension builds for Mothma, and I think it's all starting to close in on her.
Yeah.
Anything more on Mothma for us?
I mean, I can touch on it later, but if we're doing it all in one block, I mean, I I'm going to say it now.
It's go on.
I'm really excited. I've talked about this on and off in the theory. I think we might be getting a crime boss.
Because finally.
Yeah, when Tay comes back, and he's lined her up with a loan shark.
Yeah.
And again, we're in that real world moment, because it's desperate times and desperate measures. It's like, you know, in the name of revolution, like, they'll take money from anywhere. And, we've often seen it in our own histories where, like, you've had... you know, revolutionaries taking money from sort of drug cartels or from wherever they can get money and stuff. So, like, Mon Mothma is about to get into bed with gangsters with... his name was...
And it's definitely a turning point for her. Yes. Well, his name is Davo Skulden, which I took to be as Davos, which is the meeting place for the World Economic Forum. Coincidence?
I think. Also, Davos is the bad guy in Doctor Who, the Daleks. it's Davros, isn't it? But anyway,
Davros.
Whatever. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, how amazing would that be if we suddenly get Daleks? Exterminate.
A little bit of a crossover here. Daleks are almost like an older model of a R2 unit.
They put actual people inside them, and
or a later one, because instead of his little electricity thing, you can now kill the Daleks can kill people with this.
They've jacked him up. So basically, what you're saying is it's like a Tesla generator in the bottom half.
Yeah,
to build him up. Anyway, joking aside, ever since we've seen the underbelly of Coruscant, I was like, we've got to see the darker side of it properly. So maybe this is what we'll get. And I'm sure she'll have to agree to do stuff that she doesn't want to do and whatever. So,
well, I look forward to seeing how that meeting goes down, because if there's one thing this show does well, it's conversations. And to see Mothma with the crime boss, Davos Skulden, it would be very, very, very interesting just to see how far she lets herself fall in the name of the cause.
Yes, she's the one, well, not the one person, but she has the highest moral level, shall we say, in this show. And I'm hoping Mr.
Which Luthen called her out on, because he's like, this is not politics, this is revolution. And revolutions are going to get dirty, and people are going to get... die, and if you're not up for that, it's time to get out now before it's too late. But I think Mothma is going to see how far up in the mud she is and how much further she's willing to get. But as we know, she's willing to get all the way in, because she becomes the rebellion's fearless leader.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, if that's by sort of willing choice or if she's forced into it, we'll see what happens down the road. So. But I'm waiting to see that happen. I mean, next week's got to be, it's got to tie a lot of this together. And there's another thing online people are just saying, was that you've got all these amazing characters, and like, we're all watching it, and everyone who's watching it is so frustrated because we've put all the pieces together. I'm like, can you guys just fucking meet
can you guys
up
catch
so
up?
We can just get together? Just for God's sake.
We wouldn't have the delicious meeting with Cyril and Dedra if everything was rushing ahead. Should we jump to that?
Well, before you go to that, let's talk about Cyril's mum again.
Oh, yes. God bless her.
She's just, again, he's sitting there with his, just minding his own business, having the blue milk, and he's doing, you know, he's having his breakfast. And she's just beating him down again, further and further, you know, questioning.
I don't know what all this trouble is about, but I'm sure it must be your fault.
And he's like, you went through my room. I like a clean house. You went through my personal box. I'm curious to know what's in the personal box, to be honest.
Oh, aren't we all? Aren't we all? And that's a question, question that's going to be posed later in the feedback. But can I just say now, no one is allowed to go through your personal box.
Yes, yes. Even if it is your mother. So,
yeah, but she was so pleased with him when she got he got the promotion.
Well, exactly.
That she
exactly.
poured him some extra cereal.
But I love the back and forth, and he's just like being so obnoxious. He picks the bowl up and drinks from the bowl, which like, if any of us knew, we all used to do that as a kid just to wind our parents
so
up.
So funny,
like,
isn't it?
I can slurp my blue milk in front of you. Like, yeah. But yeah, the way she turned from like, I could have died, gone crazy when you were away and all of this. And then he mentions I got a promotion and she's so proud and she's just obsessed with social climbing. And you're going to make...
Exactly.
What's his name? Uncle Harlow, isn't it?
Uncle Harlow.
I'm so pleased.
Well, I think she's more... Yeah, that's the whole thing, as you say, there's the social climbing. She's not so much pleased for him. She's pleased of how...
For herself and how she's portrayed. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, exactly. But I don't think they... I guess they must have shot all the scenes with Mum before, because the camera hasn't moved from that breakfast nook, so I think they must have shot every segment of the
second
entire
unit
series.
Just set up a tripod and just went, we'll be back in a week. Just filming.
Exactly.
Yeah. But let's move on to a section that I have named Cyril the Stalker.
All right, yeah, let's go and have this nice little stalkerish meeting with Cyril and Dedra. And as we can see, Cyril is still wearing his space tie, which looks very nice on him.
But he's also got a space parker on now. I like the parker,
yes.
Which is like, quite nice.
Must be good.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Coming into winter.
His mod phase, I like it.
I think Dedra has also been lightly tailoring her uniform as well. So it seems that our Cyril is completely obsessed with Dedra. And I'll just read his line. He says, just being in your presence, I realize that life is worth living. I realize that if nothing else, there is justice and beauty in the galaxy if I just keep going.
Awkward. And
she's just like looking at him going, holy shit, how did I get into this?
Well, that's the thing I was going to touch on earlier, and that's why I think there might be a change, because like I don't know about you, Jonathan, but I smell romance in the air.
Oh, so do I.
Well,
so
because look, if you watch Deirdre, like she's stone cold ice, any confrontation, right?
Yeah.
But her mannerisms change. The minute he delivers that line, you just said, like, you know, my life was worth living, and, you know, and she's
But
thrown.
Did we detect a slight smile at one stage, or just a kind of an idea of flattery, of being flattered by this?
Well, there's a glimmer of emotion, which is start,
yeah,
isn't it?
True.
So there's that. It's funny because, you know, she's like being cold, sort of torturing Bix, and before this, you know, she meets Cyril and she puts him down and threatens him and all the rest of it. And then now she's a little bit flustered by this. And so I'm curious to see where we go with this. And the heart wants what the heart wants, John.
Yes, exactly. And maybe there's some photos of Dedra in Cyril's box.
Oh, some deep fakes or something.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that she's kind of flattered a little bit by his overwhelming dedication to him. And I thought I was going to see him fall to his knees and start self-flagellating with the cat of nine tails or something in front of her to show his dedication to the cause.
To the cause. I mean, but he did look sort of creepy. I mean, his eyes are sort of red. And as he said, he's been hanging out there. It's not a one-off thing. He's been hanging out there day after day on off chance to sort of meet up. We've all done it, you know.
What are you doing here?
We've all been there, Jonathan. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. I hope not. But the line when she goes, I've been thinking about you ever since our last meeting, and she said that wasn't a meeting, it was an interrogation.
He's so deluded. It's brilliant.
It really is funny. But yeah. I still am banking on a Dedra and Cyril team up in the future. I think she'll eventually wear him down. He's using the hold. Although he's been friend zoned, he's using the hold. If I just remain friends for her forever, kill and kidnap and interrogate on her behalf, maybe come around to liking me.
Just one day.
Now we've all been there.
Oh yeah.
Well, not the killing and everything.
I was gonna SWAT team gonna come. We'll see how far Deirdre lets him in. But
that was a classic scene where nothing happened except conversation. There was no explosions, no lasers, no lightsabers, but it was still one of the most entertaining scenes on TV in a while.
Yeah, it was. And we are, I mean, how many episodes have we had without laser fire? I'm just probably out of nine. We've probably had seven without laser fire, I would say. And we're still rambling on about it. So
The last one I think was at the heist. So that was episode six.
So
we haven't had any real action in two episodes now. Well, three episodes now.
Well,
and so look, I understand how people are getting a little bit not bored, but want it to move along a little bit at a faster clip. But you know, I'm still enjoying being in the world and enjoying the lore. I haven't got impatient yet.
No, it's funny. I was talking to another friend of mine who like works in the business and stuff, and he moaned about Obi-Wan. It was like Ewan McGregor looking bored, staring around for six episodes, and that had amazing battles and like incredible sort of like choreography here and there, and you can't please everyone every time. Hats off to them.
I thought the final lightsaber battle in Kenobi was great, but I thought the other one wasn't so much. But maybe that was the point. But I felt, looking back after watching Andor, I felt it was just all a bit rushed, and the writing wasn't as good. And then it's like, how do you blow? They didn't blow it, but it could have been better. Mm. Whereas this one, I'm finding it difficult to fault.
Yeah,
if you accept it for what it is,
and not
try to compare it to something else.
No, exactly. It's a different beast. Exactly. I mean, I keep sort of mentioning it's almost like House of Cards in the Star Wars world. It's like it's multi-level, like backstabbing political, you know, and all the rest of it. So, but
it's a political thriller, and that's set in Star Wars, and that's great.
Mm. So we've gone off there. All right, so we finished with the stalk of it. Okay.
Yeah. Shall we head over to the ISB? We'll have to get in a taxi.
Yes. All right, do that then.
All right, at the ISB, and I noticed that the Empire logo that we see everywhere, including the establishment shots out the front, and it's like a cog, and it actually reflects the shape of the beautiful white meeting room they're in. It's almost like the Empire logo made real. And there's also another logo on the wall, so it's just a little mirroring there. But it's an interesting rushed meeting Dedra comes in and she reveals that she has got a lot of the information out of Bix.
Mm.
And she gave him a list of parts, and then she was saying, yeah, go on.
No, and it's interesting, and I looked at the room as she comes in, and there's the same usual faces, but no Blevin to be seen.
Yeah, no, and there was a lot of people missing. I think Pardicus called... No, that's it. You're right. We're talking about the first meeting, not the one later on.
No.
Is that true that Blevin wasn't in that one?
Yeah, and I'm just curious, has he been written out or is he off doing something else?
Maybe. I just think maybe he's been sidelined because he was obviously trying to play politics rather than get things done. And then once Dedra has done her thing to make things work and to actually track down the rebellion, he might have just been sidelined as his responsibilities are less and less with Dedra's keep growing.
Yeah, and like fair play, because we have enough characters to keep up with. So if we don't see him again, no offense.
Well, we have a new one. We have a new one coming in. Is Dedra's assistant steps forward and says they were clean shaven. And
yes, the groomer, the grooming info. Yes, very good, very good. And how they tie everything together again. Yeah. Finally, we're tying it together.
And that connects it to Al Dani. And a classic Pardicus line, he goes, well, that's worth running down.
Yes. Well, he starts off with, that's a bit of a stretch, isn't it? And then he's like, he's convinced. Like, okay,
then he pops out with the description of him. Yeah. Mm.
And Deirdre's obviously, she's getting results now and stuff. And so she comes in with everything that Bix has obviously spewed after listening to either our podcast or Screaming Alien Babies. We're not sure which. But they mentioned the match to a targeting unit that's been recovered from a rebel group from the Mai Pei group, which was obviously mentioned last week by my buddy Saw Gerrera.
Yes.
And so again, we're starting to pull this all together because this is the job that Saw didn't want to do, but clearly he's going to do. So.
Yeah, well, I thought that was the most important part of the episode when Dedra's assistant comes in and said, we've randomly picked up a pilot with one of the stolen pieces of equipment in his ship and we're holding him on a destroyer, but they don't have much time before he's noticed that he's missing and he's believed to be one of Anto Krieger's pilots. And Anto Krieger was the male contact, as you said, of Luthans, who served in the Confederacy, this is Wikipedia again, Confederacy of Independent Systems during the Clone Wars. And he's been probing the Imperial Power Station on Spellhouse. And after the probe, he attempted to have a meeting with Saw Gerrera, and Gerrera refused, claiming that Krieger was slow and stupid and dismissing him as a separatist. And so but the raid on the power station on Spellhouse still seems to be going ahead, and now the Empire have got wind of it.
Yeah, which I think will, like as you said, like we get to see Saw Gerrera fly probably, and that will be that attack thing. I remember because last week they were talking about it where Krieger needed air support.
Yeah.
And yet here we are like with one of his pilots, so...
Well, I think this was a transport rather than a fighting force.
Okay, cool. But, hats off again to Deirdre, like genius plot. Mm. You know, they're like, oh, what do we do with this? Do we, do we blow it up? Do we blow his ship up? What do we do? And they're like, so her idea of scuttling or just damaging the ship, faking his death on board and let it drift into traffic is genius.
But
she thinks on her feet. And it's really funny, she delivers that, there's a tiny little smile. She's very smug and pleased with herself. She's like, oh,
But what I found really amusing was Pardicus says, make it so. And I'm like, oh, here we've got the anti-Picard.
Oh, I did not see that.
He goes, make it so.
Oh, amazing.
It's like, and I'm just like, that's so funny. It clearly has to be a next-gen reference.
No. I did not pick up on that, but you've watched The Next Gen repeatedly. So,
yeah, I've been on a full series rewatch, which has been amusing.
I blame COVID for that, everyone. I blame COVID for him rewatching every one of those.
Hats off to the writing. This is a proper callback, and it's not one that is just sort of the writers are like, what happened way back, and then referring to it. They planted this seed of Kathryn, and they said, and which makes the universe more and more real. The pilot that they pulled over was on his way to Kathryn, and as the Ring of Kathryn was a mining colony and deep space trading post in the asteroid belt of the Thand sector. But that was the place where Cassian went in the first episode. It was also featured in Rogue One. It was the two asteroids linked by a city and were rotating. And Kathryn was where Cassian went and killed the two guards in the first episode when he went to the brothel.
Really?
Yeah. And so just this throwaway line, he was on his way to Kathryn, and they said, well, that's where the meeting was. So hopefully we might go back to that planet, which is really cool.
I got one other thing, and just to jump back a bit. I think it's hilarious. So when they find out they've caught that pilot, and they're like, they come to Deirdre, and her assistant's like, he's already dispatched Dr. Gorst out there. And they're like, will you be going? And then Deirdre goes, no, there's no time. I'll do a remote interrogation. I'm like, brilliant, fucking brilliant. The Zoom meetings in Star Wars. Exactly. I loved it. It's like you could interrogate via Zoom. You know? I was like, oh, God, pandemic work from catches home up is with.
Also there.
Yeah, I thought that was great. It was funny.
Yeah, that was very funny.
It's like, I don't mean to travel all the way across the world. I'm sure it's holographic sort of Zoom meetings, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I just thought that was brilliant.
All right, anything more from Coruscant?
No, let us travel, Jonathan.
Let us travel. All right, that's it for Coruscant. Let's jump into our starship, strap in, and head over to Narkina 5. All right, James, we are here back in prison, and it's all about to go down. What are you thinking of things here?
Right, well, first of all, I love this. So, but the music is more upbeat than last week. Gone is the depressing, warbling sort of thing. Imagine John Carpenter and Vangelis doing a Rocky montage track. Because Andor has established himself now, and he's got a fucking smile on his face when they're meeting their numbers and they're doing this and the music's upbeat and he's doing this. And it reminds me of this very similar to the first story arc on Aldani, because he joins the group and he's unsure and nobody trusts him and nobody respects him. And he's done it again. He's earned his place.
Yep.
And
A bit of a leadership role.
Oh, he's taking a leadership role now, and that's it. And so and the music's building, and it's more positive, or at least it starts that way. And I thought that was great. I thought it's like, okay, we're back in the same situation as we were last week, but it's got a different vibe to it simply through the music and the pacing of the cutting and stuff. I thought it was a very, very clever piece of work. There's many things to talk about here, but clearly he's got a plan sort of building.
Yeah, let's break down the escape plan.
Exactly. Let's start with the space shiv, shall we? So so he's taking his walk or whatever, which basically means he's going to the toilet. And there he is. He's like slowly working away on the pipe, sort of like with his shiv, trying to cut a hole in it. And which just reminds me of every sort of World War II, like The Great Escape. And,
yeah, exactly.
Like filling his trousers with dirt as he comes back out. But
before he does takes his run, as he says, I thought it was very interesting because he there's a shot that mirrors an earlier shot of watching the guard go by. So he watches. He remember that scene goes. Yes. Oh, they're laughing at us, and he looks up and he sees a guard go by because they're obviously on his rounds. Yes. So as soon as he sees the guard go. By goes now. He's like, okay, I'm taking my run,
right?
And and a small thing before that, because I'm trying to pick up clues before then, where Olaf, who is the shortest of the short, which means he's running out of days, and then he turns to Smeagol and he goes, "The new man comes the next day, right?" And he goes, "You know the drill." And so I think the plan was. With 40 days to go, he was going to plan the escape with the new man coming to replace Olaf. Well, just because it's 40 days away, he's got time to prepare, and he knows exactly.
He knows the routine.
He knows exactly the day it's going to happen.
Got it.
So that's it. So then he watches a car go by. He's going to take my run and head to the bathroom and then go ahead and do it to the great escape.
So it's the great escape. So he's working his shiv on the pipe. And I'm pretty sure when he blows that pipe, I reckon we get more steam, Jonathan. I reckon we get some steam.
I thought it was it might have been an electrical conduit. That would short the system.
Yeah. Or could be hydraulics for that lift. I don't know.
We'll see. It definitely will have some effect.
I just want to pull you up on one thing. All right.
Go on.
He's doing a brilliant job. Can we not call Andy Serkis like Smeagol anymore? Just leave him alone.
What's his name in the show? I can't remember.
It's Loy, isn't it? It's Kino Loy.
Kino Loy. Okay, yeah, we'll take it. I think he's. I say that affectionately because I love Smeagol. Kino Loy. All right, great. So Kino Loy. Yeah, go ahead.
And then obviously, the next bit is obviously that they're on program. There's a new man on the floor. New man on the floor, and so they him and the other guy stand and they observe and they have that conversation. Like he's like,
he's working with another guy on another table, isn't he?
Exactly. So this is clearly it's a room wide thing.
Yes.
This is like. So this is a proper prison break that they're working on and stuff. So the fact that they observe that you can hold the rail, and as they say, anything that moves can't fry you. So they've worked out.
Exactly.
That, okay, so they're working out what is hot and what is not, basically.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, it's classic World War II escape thing. Yeah. They're watching.
He's like two men back, two weapons, no boots. So the guys on the platform, there's only two of them. And because they're so confident frying everyone, their only weapons, they're not ranged weapons, they're melee weapons. So you can get close to them. And so they're only those sticks.
So if you've got one guy comes down and he's on that platform and they can't fry you, two of them can take the
one guy,
take his stick and his boots, because he has boots, he comes down.
Yeah,
and then you're basically immune at that point. They can't stop you.
Exactly, because the elevator's not wired, and as you said, they say that anything that moves is not wired.
Yeah, so they can. So we're definitely forming a plan, but.
But I wonder what happens then. So they jump up onto the platform coming down, overpower the guy, take his stick, climb back up, overpower the other guy on the top. But then I guess they plan on the doors being open at that point, or
I guess maybe what he's working the shiv on, maybe that's hydraulics for that.
Right.
But I mean, how he knows that, how he's got schematics to know what he's, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see how that
goes. I think
we've
figured out the first part of their escape plan.
The first part of it is, and if you get through that door, as we saw before, there's a rack of boots.
Yeah.
And then you've got boots. And so I don't know. We'll see where we get there. But it's definitely building, and all this is happening, and the sound is building, and the music is building, and it's great. And and then we move on to, and the next thing we say is like, Olaf, the older guy, is starting to lose it. You know, he's like, he's confused. Yeah. He's at the table, and they're like, they're carrying on, and he's like. And he's oh, I don't know what's, we said that 2 minutes ago. No, and it's, and again, the tension's building, the music's building, and it's all just building up. And then we get into the bridge, the transfer scene.
Yeah.
And they're signing across to the other, and they're finding out about level two.
Yeah.
And at this point, Kino Loy, or Smeagol, as you call him, he's getting angry because his boys are getting out of control, and he's losing control of his crew.
Yeah.
And again, still the music's building, still, and it's getting pretty intense in here and stuff, and then doesn't one of the guys, they hint that somebody says, oh, level two, they're all dead or something, because
there was that moment where
the power
goes out.
So what's your theory on the power then? Come on.
The power went out because they fried 100 men on level two, because later we find out, hopefully I'm not jumping too far ahead, that basically what's happening in the prison is that there's no one's getting out. The people that they're releasing, they're just sending back to a different level. And the guys found out, obviously, how you're not going to find out. Obviously, he was meant to go to you know, a new level with all new intakes.
But they couldn't, or they couldn't see in the transfer bridges. I think that's what happens. Somebody saw him across a bridge, maybe. So
right.
Yeah.
But I think what happens that happened, he got taken back in, and instead of it being a, it was one of the old places. So there were 99 people that knew that he was meant to be, because he told them, meant to be released, and they all just started to riot. And so they just fried them all.
Just toasted them. There we go. Yeah.
And so we had a power loss at that point, and everyone starts to freak out. But so this is obvious. The Empire's plan is to just, they are just now slaves, and no one's getting out, and everything that they're moving towards just doesn't mean a thing.
And, well, that's it. And then and then old Kino Loy sort of like loses his shit, and he hits one of the other guys, and then Cassian's like, tells him, you know, we gotta pretend together, we don't know anything. We've got to pretend, pull it together. And so then again, we're back to the same as we were on Aldani. And now you've got Cassian is ascending to take control of the team. Which brings me back to Luthen, obviously chose well, didn't he?
Did.
He's like, you know, he's like this.
Even though he's trying to kill him now.
I don't think he is really. I don't think so. I think he just wants to find him. I don't think he wants to kill him. Because it's his son.
But he keeps referring to... Yeah, right. He keeps referring to, I am your father.
I am your father.
He keeps referring to him as a loose end that Vel's meant to tidy up. But, so, I don't know. But obviously, we know that
obviously that's not going to happen.
Will so. Come around, yeah. So that was a really... Because there was also that great scene where the... The name of the episode comes from Nobody's Listening, where they're sitting opposite each other on their bunks, and he's trying to bring Kino over to his own side, and Cassian's like, you know, we're cheaper than droids and easier to replace.
Yeah, and also that, again, that is almost the same speech that he gave to Nemec on Aldani.
Right.
You think they care what we say? You think, you know, they care enough to make an effort? It's the same thing. It's the arrogance of the Empire. Like you said, we are nothing to them. Cheaper than droids and easier to replace. Nobody's listening.
Yeah.
It's very
and
good.
Then he screams it out. And obviously and there's no reaction. So no one is listening.
But what I found interesting was this. Is like he asks Loy how many days he's got left, how many shifts.
Yeah.
And he says 100 or whatever.
200. 200 and a bit,
something.
Think,
whatever. Yeah. And... remember when he first brought Andor into the barracks, as it were, and he's like, this is the clock. Don't look at the clock.
Don't look at
clearly,
it.
Clearly, like, Kino Loy now sees light at the end of the tunnel. He knows he only has 250 days, and he can't resist counting them down. So he can see light
but
at the end
of
the tunnel.
But it was Melshi. Melshi was telling Andor not to... to look at the clock, but Kino Loy's obviously sees his exit on the horizon, but that's that great scene with the doctor, and I liked the blue stripe to designate him doctor.
Yeah.
He comes marching through, and we've got that cold-eyed Imperial officer that escorts him through on program. But then they come to the hallway and deal with. Poor old Olaf that's on his way out.
And just the way the doctor's like, he goes, I don't want to know his name.
Yeah.
He knows, and he's probably had to do this so many times, that poor guy. Yeah. He's a prisoner as well, and he's basically just going around just giving out death sentences to everyone. I thought it was great, and I love the performances from Andy Serkis and the back and forth this time. And I really hope that he escapes with them and he plays a big part in the rebellion.
Yeah, well, that was the question I wanted to ask you. What do you think? Do you think Kino is going to... I know that he will join the escape plan, but do you think he will... I would love him to join the rebellion. Do you think he's going to join the rebellion?
Well, I think you and I have just killed off Andy Serkis. That was my gag I was getting to. I hope not. I hope he features all the way through next season. But like kiss of death, when you and I say, "Oh, they're really fucking great. I love this," but then next week they're gone. Like as we know,
exactly.
they
are willing to kill people in this show.
Yeah, no one's safe apart from like Andor, basically, because he's the only one standing. by the time we get... Oh, no, actually, apart from one of the other guys who's in the crew, isn't he, at the start. But, yeah, I mean, I would love to see Serkis play a bigger role. I mean, he's a big-name actor now, and like you would think so. But he's,
and he's brilliant. I wasn't convinced about him for years because I just saw the motion cap. But now I love him. I think he's great. And
he's really good in this. And the way he goes from, he just gets more and more rattled in this episode and like loses his shit. And then the final scene is like when they're on program and they're marched out. And now Kino's fully committed to this escape. Yeah. And the music starts warping and building. And Cassian asks him, how many guards on each level? And finally he responds, never more than 12. And I just, and it cuts to black and I got goosebumps. I told you before, it's like, and I was like, that, I mean.
Yeah, me too. It was as close to a fist pumping moment as you're going to get in Andor.
And it better just jump straight into a goddamn prison break space battle next week. And just
exactly.
You know, and then obviously a Mon Mothma party with a big sort of like hoodlum. I mean, and just tickle boxes.
Well, I
next
just
week,
started so. Spontaneously clapping when he said that line, because it's like, I'm so excited for the next one. But like the prison break, they've got to get through so many levels, and it's obviously going to be quite a big one because it's all starting to unravel. Because then they've got to get through those levels, they've got to get through up to the top, up to the space dock. Then they've got to find transport off planet as well. So
how many episodes really we got? Three. Oh, well, we got three left, right?
Three left. One more in this arc, and then there's another two.
So, I have a funny feeling next week is still going to be a slow burn.
No,
and
no,
then I think
no,
we'll have
no,
a double
no,
episode, which is like. You know, it'll be a cut between the space battle with Saw Gerrera and the escape. I think that's how they'll do it. They'll do two whole episodes where it cuts back and forth. Because you're right, to escape this, to escape that planet, to escape that prison, it's quite a lot to do. And they're good at the detail and they're good at everything to do. And if you're trying to intercut that with two other storylines in a 43-minute episode...
Right,
it's going to be a cop out to do it, because in effect you're only going to show 15 minutes of them escaping a whole planet prison.
Well, I think the Ferrix and Coruscant. I think there's still going to be scenes in the ISB.
Well, you know what? Or it could be.
There's
going to
be
like
a breakout of.
Well, I don't know. It could go
Bix,
like the last one, and it could just.
But
be...
But I reckon the next episode is going to be mostly prison break. And to finish off the arc, because the directors change.
Yeah.
And so I think this will complete this arc, and then the next two episodes will be the attack on that power station that the Empire knows about. So there's going to be an ambush by the Empire on the on that power station attack, where Saw Gerrera comes into it, I reckon. Luthen's involved, and... I think it'll all blow up, and the rebellion will be in open revolt.
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, I'm all up for next week if it's just prison break, the whole thing.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
But we'll see. But yeah, I mean, overall, this week was another good. I mean, every time I start one, it's it's another slow burn. But it doesn't seem to disappoint.
But it doesn't seem to matter, no. I mean, that one line where he just says, never more than 12, which is just a line. And I'm like, yes!
I'm getting a T-shirt with that. It just says never more than 12.
Actually. Yeah, as if it's like this super action-packed moment, but it was just one line. But it said everything you needed to know.
It was, I don't know. I mean... I want a little bit more action next week, but we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I think it's going to follow the pattern, and episode three will be all action, as it's the finale of the arc. Mm. But yeah, good. Anything more on Narkema 5?
Not so much on that.
All right. Well, let's head over to the notes section. I'm sure you've got a few notes, Cindy James.
I have one.
Yeah. All right, great. All right, let's go to the notes. All right, here we are back in the notes section. And James, what have you got?
Just one random thing from the internet. Just a rumor mill that I was looking into, like, Uncle Harlow. And there's one theory floating around that it's actually another secret identity of Luthen. Which would then, like, you imagine, so you got Cyril going around trying to be the most, like, insane fascist, trying to impress the Empire.
Right.
And then only to find out that his uncle is actually leading the rebellion.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, everyone, I think the problem with this being such a slow burn, there's so many threads going there that people are just going bananas on the internet and are just making
them. Yeah.
You know, that Tony Gilroy.
But that's what,
like,
I love about the week to week rather than the
binge.
Rather than the binge dump, because you get to talk about it. We get to podcast. We get to speculate about next week, what we think is going to happen. We get to kind of guess about mysteries and look up planets and really kind of savor in the details of each episode. And, you know, I've really been enjoying this stretch with you, my friend James, watching Andor together and podcasting. It's been great fun.
I'd like to say thank you to you and especially to Jason for letting me come on this, because it's, I mean, I'm a fan of all things Star Wars, but, like, this is by far the best one. And so I feel quite honored to be boring everyone else by me rambling.
Well, look, I don't think we're boring anyone. Where things are moving ahead, and it's been really good. And and apart from The Mandalorian, and I put these on par with each other now, but as they're so different, I'm happy to put them as equal favorites.
I'm going to put this above The Mandalorian. I mean, I love Mandalorian.
In terms of production and skills and filmmaking, I absolutely put this above Mandalorian.
Mm. I mean, visually, I mean, Mandalorian is just, I loved it because it was High Plane Drifter. It was basically, you were watching Clint Eastwood, like, and it's amazing. And so they both have different things, but as a highbrow.
But as good as this is, I still haven't been, and spoilers ahead for those who haven't watched The Mandalorian, I still haven't been crying like a schoolboy seeing Luke Skywalker walking back in possibly one of the greatest moments of TV, sitting there weeping for about 10 minutes, being the happiest I've ever been watching TV ever.
I wasn't. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I wasn't that. I wasn't that bad.
Well, I think it was in the middle. It was still in the middle.
Don't make excuses. Move on. Just fucking move on.
It was in the middle of the lockdown.
Just move on.
All right. No, I'm still in notes.
Oh,
so okay. I just wanted to give a special shout out to the opening, where the opening comes and there's a synth version of the Andor theme, and it sounds like an 80s video game, and you have that moon rising turning into the Rebel logo, and it's just, it's a beautiful little piece of TV making, I think.
Yeah.
And then I have a question for you, James. If you were to be put on program, would you be hands behind the head, linking fingers, or touching the temples that, like Cassian does? I think I'd be linked fingers at the back.
I haven't really thought about it that much, Jonathan. I would probably be somewhere in between, with just delicate hands towards the back.
Delicate hands behind the back, ready for action.
Okay. Sensible, like, thing. If you link them behind your head and you get knocked to the ground, you're going to break your nose. So
that's
better to
true,
have them ready
true.
At some point to go somewhere.
Yes, exactly. But, well, that's interesting. I mean, I think maybe you're right that that's a good character choice by
Cassian,
Diego Luna, is it?
Yeah.
It might have been actually an acting choice that he is always ready.
It could be, or it could have been, it could be grooming. It could be in the glam squad.
Don't
touch the hair. We have to reset every take. Just fucking don't touch the hair. It's like, whereas Andy Serkis is running his hair through his Brill Cream. His hands are going through his Brill Cream. He's like,
I was actually thinking about that since you brought it up. I'm like, where in this prison is Andy getting his hair gel from?
I think it's natural oil.
Maybe it's a perk.
Natural oil. Yeah, a perk. But it's the food with no flavour. He just smears some on his head as well.
Exactly.
So it's like he's doing that. But I just noticed I don't know why, I thought last week or whatever that their uniforms were like almost like paper, kind of, you know, like disposables or white ones. But they're not. You look at them, it's like the orange is actually leather when you look at them. They're like quite fancy.
Yeah. Well, I thought the material reminded me of the material that they make IKEA bags out of, you know, those big blue ones. So it's like plastic like nylon canvas. Yeah.
Oh, yes, because nylon conducts electricity.
Right.
So it's like crispy there chicken in a bag when they fry them. It's like in the KFC, they're done. It's like a microwavable bag. They just put.
Yeah, exactly.
But boiling the bag prisoners.
Yeah. The costume design is fantastic still, and all those scenes of Mothma again are fantastic, and even the uniforms and the way the prison uniforms are designed is fantastic as well.
Yeah, the blue touch was nice with the
Wasn't it interesting how he stuck out so much just with the blue trim, and it was such a change of pace.
Yeah, and I love that bit. Kino Loy goes, I haven't seen you for a while. He goes, I'm not going anywhere. Or whatever.
Yeah, right.
No one's going anywhere. So.
No one's going anywhere. All right, let's head over to the news.
All wings reporting.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
All right, in the news today, I just wanted to say, if you haven't checked out Tales of the Jedi yet, it's some classic OG Star Wars, and as much as I love Andor, I got the Star Wars chills several times watching this. Jedi's lightsabers and the Force. We basically see Count Dooku and Ahsoka's backstory. And there was one scene that had all your Clone Wars favorites, and this nostalgia wave nearly knocked me off the couch. And it's being covered right here in the Star Wars TV cast by our friends Alex and Eric. And I'm going to listen to the first episode right after we're finished recording. So definitely have a listen to that. And it's all done by Dave Filoni, who is a George Lucas's Padawan. And if the new Ahsoka series is anything like this, then we're in for a treat. And James, have you watched any of these yet?
I haven't watched any of these yet. It keeps popping up on my Disney thing. And I mean, it's been so busy, and I have to watch Andor. So yeah. I know this, but I will probably get into it. I'll probably just save it until Andor is finished, and then I'll just do them in one long stack.
So. But they're 100% worth listening, and the boys, Alex and Erica, are covering them two episodes at a time, I think, and that's how I've been watching them. And the first two
are
20 minutes each.
Oh, okay.
So watch two at a time, and they're like 45. But they're like the old Clone Wars. Did you watch?
Some of the Clone Wars. That was one of my goals in COVID that I didn't actually manage to do. I sadly built like stupid gaming rigs and all the rest of it, but I didn't manage to finish all of the Clone
Time well
Wars.
Spent.
Yeah. I did like it, and I started watching it, and I started watching some of Rebels, but I just didn't get into it. But I'm excited for Ahsoka, because
the thing is that again they're all done in arcs. And I think that if you go on to...
You've told me this before, tried to get me to watch some years. Yeah. Yes. They're episode arcs, right?
Three or two or four, actually. But you can tell. But if you go on to the Disney Plus, which I assume everyone has got, because no one's downloading this and/or illegally, I hope. They've broken them up into groups. So you can watch all the Ahsoka-relevant ones or... you know, the highlights of it. But with Ahsoka coming up in the hopefully not too distant future, it's definitely worth a catch up on that, because she is one of my favorite Star Wars characters, and I can't wait for that series.
Yeah, I mean, just the way she was revealed, where she, you know, that scene at night.
Oh, that
where
she was amazing.
Yeah, it's proper samurai in the dark, and just to light up the blade to assassinate, and then again drops into darkness and moves on. I thought that was so cool. So yeah, I'm very, very into that when that one comes along.
And in this, there were some real Kurosawa moments, and it's done beautifully again. So if you feel like some more Jedi feeling stuff, head on over to that. And don't forget to check out Alex and Eric's podcast on the Star Wars TV cast. All right, so shall we head to Only in Star Wars? All right, so here we are in the Only in Star Wars section, and this is almost a bit of a reverse, because for once in the Star Wars universe, we actually saw railings. There were railings on the elevator, and as we've seen, they will put railings on something that's only 10 foot high for an unending abyss. There are no railings.
There are no railings. Very true. That
so railings have become canon in Star Wars. We didn't think they actually existed in the Star Wars universe.
Scaffold railings.
But I can I can confirm that railings are now canon.
Yeah, because you'd have like lifts on like, you'd have those huge lifts that would come up in the middle of like the loading docks on like the Star Destroyers on the launch bays.
Yeah,
and you had the classics in the originals where like they're shooting stormtroopers and they fall down because there's no safety rails ever.
If there was only a railing, as we've seen that anyone can survive a lightsaber stabbing now in the Star Wars universe, he probably would have survived that.
Trick it under the arm, don't you? Is that how you do it? The comedy thing.
Unfortunately, there were no railings on that very narrow bridge.
Yeah, nothing to do with the fact that Harrison Ford said he'd only come back if he could do one and die. That was the deal. How about if I just throw myself off here? Is that, you survive. Exactly. Now, what if I just throw myself off?
But we can confirm that in Star Wars that railings are now canon.
Oh, wonderful. I feel safer already.
All right, let's head over to the listener feedback. All right, welcome to the listener feedback section. Send in your comments at the Podcastica Facebook page or at talk@podcastica.com. Yeah, join the Podcastica group. It's really good fun, and we always get plenty of banter around the Star Wars question of the week and a lot of feedback from there. And so there's lots of discussion about your favorite shows, and all your favorite hosts are there to interact with.
And not only do we have our first voicemail, we have two.
Two, James.
We have two listeners, Jonathan. Is one your mum and the other one's mine?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought so. Anyway, but if you want to join our mums and leave some voicemails, you can go to podcastica.com, go to the contact page and hit the record voice tab on the right, or record one on your phone and then email it to us at talk@podcastica.com.
All right, so our first letter comes from John Compson, and this is for last week's episode. And John says, "Hi guys, really enjoy the podcast. I have a fun theory about Khan, his story arc, and how he could be reconnected to Cassian's storyline. What if his mystery uncle ends up pulling some strings to get him a job on the Death Star, and he becomes the person who presses a button to shoot the laser blast, which destroys Carriff, the ultimate revenge?" Yes.
Very good,
that
John.
That would be a good turnaround.
We cut to him sort of giggling under his special visor. Like he's got the big, he just sees like his little jawline as he presses it.
Well, that's one of my favourite.
Would we see?
Star
would we
Wars
see
like
the tie? We'd see the tie. Wouldn't we? The blast shield on, but then the space tie as he presses the button. So,
Those Death Star helmets make no sense whatsoever.
I know.
How do you see over the front? Is it just? I don't know how they work at all.
Are they supposed to protect them from the actual laser beams? Because with the crystals.
Close proximity, I like how when it's firing, they just lean back. That's going to protect them.
It's like the nuclear bomb test in the desert in the 50s. Oh, just put the goggles on, we'll be fine. Just like cut to 30 years later after the Death Star, there's all these troopers going around. Anyway, next one is Kevin Smith. "Hi, guys. Thanks for the podcast. I enjoy your discussions and insights. Just a quick note here. My first thought when seeing Cassian on the pleasure planet was that he was looking for his sister." Possibly, although he was just looking for fun, I think. Anyway, Kevin goes on to say, "Perhaps he was spending his money enjoying his time too, but it is the kind of place that he'd be looking for his sister. Keep up the good work."
Thanks, yes. Kevin.
I mean, maybe he was.
I think he was just taking a little time off from that search, having, what were they called, Peebos? With that girl, the English girl.
Greeny green ones. I'm like,
she was quite funny. And part of my question asking for feedback on this week's episode was whether anyone was shipping Cyril and Dedra. So Catcraft says, "Was my first thought, somebody's thirsty." Yes, I thought there was a little bit of that going on as well.
Bob Oakes writes it and says, "Now that I understand the rhythm of the series, I enjoyed this episode for what it is. The slow burn episode, after the setup episode, and before the payoff episode.
Yep. Yeah,
I know. Just trying to convince ourselves, Bob. I know. And he continues, since I did not expect a big action-packed payoff, I was able to settle in and really enjoy the episode. I think that's the way we have to. I mean, I'm treating every single episode now as a slow burn. And yeah, if right. something happens, it's like, something oh, joy. Happens. Great. Joyous. Yeah. Praise to the maker. Bob continues, I really like that this was setting up what I can only assume will be an action-packed jailbreak next week. But I really enjoyed seeing how this band of convicts got to a point where they understood that jailbreak is necessary. When the doctor explained what happened on 2, and I thought it was just perfect, and the whole cell block realized that there is no hope of ever leaving,
yep,
and rebelled and were killed for no, you know, with no remorse.
Mm.
Yeah. And there's no hope of ever leaving. Escape becomes the only choice, and it's just so well done. I agree there. And I can't wait to see how it all unfolds next week. Yeah, it's so well paced and,
yes,
you know, as
and well written as well, because you know, because all these characters now have to do something because it makes sense for the situation they're in and for their characters. You know, it's not sort of like everyone's joining in for because it's they all realize that if they don't escape, they're going to die. So they're you know, their hand has been forced, and I really put that down to some great writing that people in this series make logical decisions, and yes, escaping is a logical decision though.
Well, it has to be. And also, again, we referenced a million times like the Empire and the Nazis and stuff. And you think about concentration camps and all the rest of it. There was no like, oh, we're going to release you after like a certain amount of time. You're here until the end, or your end. So, so escape is the only choice. And I just love the way that Andy Serkis's character, it took this whole episode to convince him, but once he was convinced, it was like,
it was an instant switch. It was just sort of like when he realized, okay, no one's getting out, everyone's getting killed, bang, we're escaping, and that's because that was the only logical conclusion to make, which is a reflection on how watertight the writing is, I think.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Mm-hmm. All right, Russell Piner, two questions, if I may. What do you think about the theory that Dedra might be Andor's lost sister? I personally wouldn't like that to be the case. Not everything in Star Wars needs to be connected, and that's going to be covered in a voicemail coming up, so let's hold that off, but good question. And also, how would you think or like Andor and K2SO to meet up? Probably not until next series, but still. And in reference to the post question about is anyone shipping Dedra and Cyril, I think it would be an interesting thread to follow. We've never seen an Imperial relationship before. Dedra is already a great character, adding so much meat to the bones of the often two-dimensional Empire. That's true. And what do you think about K2SO? I mean, he's one of my favorite characters, especially in new Star Wars,
that's what's so good about this show. There's so much going on. I mean, it might not be like big battles and stuff, but I totally forgot about him.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we saw one of the other kill droids or whatever they're called, like the other episode, but I completely slipped my mind. So, yeah, I mean, I can't see any logical way that he would be brought in before the end of this season without it being a little bit of a shoe-in. So I think we'll probably have to wait.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm happy.
Could
to wait.
Could be maybe one, but in the right at the end of the finale of the next series, there might be room for a quick cameo as a teaser for next season. But you're right. I think the story is so full at the moment that for him to come in would just be, would be a really kind of sequel-y kind of like, oh, look, remember this guy?
Yeah,
you know, it's just unnecessary about this at this stage because the story is pretty solid.
There's so much they've got to tie up, and it's getting to that point. It's like I feel that this all's funneling down one pipe, and then by the end of this, I'm hoping.
Yeah, it's all the streams are coming into one river now, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm hoping by like season two, we're just it's not it's not slow burn.
No.
Actually, I think I'm hoping that we get a roller coaster for the second season. Yeah. But
and the sad news about season two, which is definitely going ahead, but it won't be out until early 2024. So, James, we have a year off before we reconvene, but hopefully we'll come back on one of the other series.
Yeah, we'll come and bother Jason or something else at some point.
Yeah, exactly. Last of Us, hello.
Yeah, and I'm gonna reach out to him about that. Actually, I just finished.
James is gonna put his hand up. You're doing a replay now, aren't you?
I just finished it last night, actually.
Oh so wow!
I wonder
he's a bit emotional today.
Yeah, that's another whole podcast. I can get into that one, but we'll save that. But our good friend here, Jeffrey H. Lubb, again, he's back. Time for a jailbreak. I also enjoy the way the show builds and completes short stories that build on each other. Yeah, again, another testament to the writing.
Mm-hmm, exactly right. So Steve Barb. Hello, Steve. Getting tired of Jailhouse Shock. This series of episodes feels like it could have been trimmed down a bit. Yeah, that's a fair comment. And in his follow-up, he says, the Ringiverse had a good question. What do we think is in Cyril's private box?
We've discovered. Yeah, we know. We know. Yeah.
As I said earlier, I think there might be a couple of sneaky photos of Dedra in there.
Some Imperial lingerie shots, deep throat shots of Dedra.
Yeah, and some Imperial porn, some Imperial approved porn. But God knows what that would be like.
I don't think we need to get there.
No, let's not go into that. But yeah, so that is a literal mystery box. All right, and we are here in the voicemails. We are very pleased to have two voicemails this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more than pleased to say we have had great numbers on each episode. And we are growing each week as more people catch up on Andor. And your feedback has been a big part of the show. So thanks for all the support. And our first voicemail comes from Adam in Sydney.
G'day, guys. It's Adam from Sydney. Just visiting down in Melbourne currently, wandering around the streets here. Love the show. It was great this week. And love your work, guys. You always spot stuff that I miss. And you make my watching the show even better. So appreciate the work this week. And love the work. The actors were brilliant. Smeagol was just unreal, the actor. It took me a while to click, really.
See, he's calling him Smeagol as well.
Yeah, you fucking Australians. It's like, you have no respect for Andrew. Sir Andrew, as he would once be known, I'm sure. But thanks, Adam. It's nice that we're filling in the gaps for people who aren't watching it three times over and like scrutinizing and freeze-framing like we are, like psychopaths. I have subtitles on the third watch.
I love the idea of you just cruising around Melbourne with us in your ears, Adam. So I'm glad you enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
All right, we have another one, and this one comes from John Compson in the UK.
Oh, John.
Hi, Jonathan and James. Really enjoying the podcast and really, really enjoying Andor. I think the writing is incredible on this show. It really puts other Star Wars TV shows to shame. Book of Boba Fett. Excuse me. But I'm curious to know your thoughts on Cassian and his sister and that relationship and when we might see that again. It obviously featured very heavily in the early episodes and it really felt like a driving force and a motivational force for him. We met the adult Cassian when he was searching for his sister and putting himself at risk to try and find more information about her. And then we haven't heard much recently until the conversation with Marva when he was leaving and she said to forget about his sister or stop looking or that she was gone or something along those lines. So I wonder if the sister is a character who's already in the show. There would only be three main contenders and that would be Bix, Claire and Dedra. And I think Bix is out of the question. I know they had a relationship and although we've seen Luke and Leia kiss in the past, I don't think we're going down that route again. Claire, we don't know much about, but I think maybe she's either a little bit too young, but she also comes across as someone who's spent her entire life on Coruscant. So that leaves Dedra, who, although it seems very unlikely on the surface, could be possible. Who knows? Maybe she dyes her hair. We don't really know what happened to the sister, so maybe she is I don't know, been taken on by an evil family who trained her in the ways of the evil empire. Anyway, interested to know your thoughts. Really enjoying the podcast. Again, look forward to the last three episodes. Thanks.
Oh, John. You've spent a lot of time thinking about the sister, haven't you? And I don't know. I mean, it's...
See, I think that is one of the only flaws in the writing, and that it might have been just a device to get him on that planet in the beginning, looking for her and able to interact with those two guys.
Yeah, but then Marva to say stop looking for your sister, and like he hadn't really been looking for her that hard. So like from Marva to bring it up again. So I think John might be onto something. But
he might well be. I think that
we've
might
got other,
be.
We've got other content. No, I mean like. Is Vel adopted? Could it be Vel? I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
Dedra's interesting.
Dedra's an interesting one, but I think that's a stretch. I think there's.
Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. All right. Gentleman's bet then, John. All right. I'm saying it's not Dedra. So.
I think it was actually a bit of a spot that they got themselves into, and so Marva's reply, stop thinking about your sister, you're never going to find her, and was died, was just to tidy that up. And I don't think that going forward that will be a plot line, even though it is a very Walking Dead style, you know, just to introduce a character and then never follow up on them again. I'd be interested though if they do come back to it, maybe in season two. But I wonder who it could be, if it is someone.
Or there's a flashback to Marva going back and killing the sister. Don't look for your sister.
Yeah, but that is definitely a loose end in this story, and I wonder if we are going to have
that's
it.
That's true, because they've been very tidy with everything else. So I think John could be on something. I don't know who she could be at this point, though. So she could turn up as a rebel fighter, you know, with Sorbera, for all you know.
Yeah.
So, don't know. So.
Yeah, and I don't think that it's going to be Bix. That would be a little bit too early Star Wars, 70s Star Wars.
Yeah, and also it's been a little bit more than a kiss, isn't it?
That's true.
It's a little bit. I mean, I know this is a grown-up one, John, but that's just wrong.
Well,
sorry,
as the director of Empire said, you know, a kiss in Star Wars is the equivalent of having sex. So I think Han and Leia did hook up, but just not on screen. All right, well, thanks for listening, everyone, and thank you again, James. That was a great episode.
Yeah, and if you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com. And while you're there, check out the other shows as well.
Yeah, and I really recommend checking out Tales of the Jedi. And also, there is going to be a wrap-up for House of the Dragon as well. So if you're all caught up with that, make sure you check out Rima's podcast. They do a very deep dive, and I think there's also going to be a wrap-up of Rings of Power as well. So all your favorite shows, but make sure you stick with us, and because the best is yet to come, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're building to it. It has to, please God. We have to. doesn't it?
There's this one scene in one of the trailers, which I'm still not going to spoil because everyone's forgotten about it.
Yeah, but you talked about it every week, so...
Yeah, I know when it's coming, and it's something I've never seen before, and it looks super cool.
It's not the Daleks, is it? It's not the Star.
Not the Daleks. No guest appearances.
No guest appearances from the Doctor. All right.
And if you're listening to this on House Podcastica, but you're not interested in the other shows on there, we also have a podcast just for you, Star Wars fans. And which you can also find on podcastica.com or search for it on the Star Wars TV cast on your podcast app. And there is one episode of the Tales of the Jedi up now.
Do that. And also don't forget to rate us and review us and tell your friends. We're getting better at this. So you know, it helps to grow the podcast. And as Jonathan says, it's great to engage with you lot as well, because it's nice to have everyone else's opinions and theories rather than just us two idiots. So it's good to have everyone get involved.
Yeah, and it really is nice to think of you listening to us wandering whatever you're doing. You know, wandering the streets of Melbourne is a classic. All right, guys, thanks again. That's our show.
Thanks for listening. I'm James.
And I'm Jonathan.
And may the force be with you.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.